All her life, Emily Wings Smith felt different from other kids. Between therapist visits, sudden uncontrollable bursts of anger, and unexplained episodes of dizziness and loss of coordination, things always felt not right. For years, her only escape was through the stories she'd craft about herself and the world around her. It wasn't until a near-fatal accident at the age of 12 that Emily discovered the truth, a grapefruit-sized tumor at the base of her skull. Emily Wings Smith has written a memoir which chronicles her struggle with both mental and physical disabilities during her childhood, the traumatic accident that may have saved her life, and the means by which she coped with it all, writing. The name of the book is All Better Now, a memoir, and we welcome Emily Wings Smith to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Given that writing was always such a part of the equation for you, did it seem inevitable that at some point you would write about this and write a memoir?
You know, I never really expected that I would be writing a memoir because I had always thought of it as something that someone more famous than I would do, that someone who was well-known for as a celebrity or even a well-known writer. I've written two other books, The Way He Lived and Back When You Were Easier to Love, but I'm not like a superstar writer that's super well-known. So I always have written like about my own feelings and about my own experiences, but they've always been kind of muted by fiction. And that was when my editor said, you know, once I hear your story, I think you should write your story as nonfiction because it's compelling and people will be able to relate to it. And you're a writer anyway, so why have you not written a memoir yet? And that's when it came to be.
Once you take that on and you decide that that's what you want to do, does it then flow very naturally?
Yeah, I think it did for me at least. It was kind of a struggle getting started, like getting past the idea of it being really self-indulgent, because I was sort of thinking, who am I to write a memoir? I'm just some person. And so trying to decide, like, what ideas about my life are going to be most interesting to the reader and are they going to relate to the most? So then I just decided I'm going to just start pulling out the memories that are most vivid and important to me and figure out if that makes a story. So I sort of started it by scenes of scenes from the hospital and scenes of how I felt alienated after, and then scenes of how I felt alienated before, and things started coming together. And then I got, I was trying to figure out a little more about what my life was like before the accident, and that's when I actually got access to my medical records that I have scattered throughout the book, the medical records of my therapy visits when I was young and in a therapy program for children, and when I when I was actually in the hospital and how they were treated. And I felt like when I interspersed my memories with those factual accounts, that was when the writing really, it made sense and it kind of coalesced into a full book.
So the question that comes through so often through the book is, how did they miss a brain tumor?
Yeah. And I think it's something that we wonder about now, especially. I was just at the doctor's yesterday, and they had a sign of, you know, where to go. Go this way for audiology. Go this way for general care. This way for an MRI. And it was just at the general health clinic. And I think it's kind of hard to think about it now that at the time, MRIs and CAT scans weren't sort of the default. I went to my pediatrician. I went to an eye doctor. I went to a couple of different doctors in my childhood complaining of the headaches, and nobody said, go get a scan, because they were they were very cost prohibitive. They were thousands of dollars at the time, and not just getting a preemptive scan was not covered by insurance. And so most of the doctors were like, oh, yeah, it's because she puts a lot of pressure on herself. You know, she is in therapy. She probably has a little bit of anxiety. The headache should ease up. And it was only thanks to getting hit by a car and sustaining bad enough frontal injuries that it merited a CAT scan that we even were able to find out about this giant tumor that had been growing probably for most of my life.
A grapefruit-sized tumor at the base of your skull. So you are dealing with the injuries of the car accident, but then you're also dealing with this new knowledge. So step number one was what?
So we were able to get, the tumor was fully operable. It was not cancerous, and there was no immediate regrowth. So I was in the hospital for about a month with just healing. I had to relearn how to walk, how to eat, how to do basic activities, because I also now had a frontal head injury, which had like kind of made me more impulsive. So besides losing the coordination that I had from the back of my head, I was also trying to learn like how to interact with the world again. And so it was kind of a weird transition when then it was like, okay, you're back. Time has passed, and now you're dropped into this junior high world that you really know nothing about and trying to deal with the headaches that are still there, regardless of the tumor being gone and it being magic that, oh, well, now the tumor's gone. You won't have headaches anymore. But I did, and I still had the same problems that I had had before the accident. They were just compounded by a feeling of being different because I had been in the hospital for so long, and other kids couldn't really understand what I had gone through.
Your previous writing had been for young adults, and when you decided to write a memoir, this is geared toward that audience as well. And I assume you wanted that, and you wanted the takeaway to be that for kids, that to examine sort of what's going on in their life.
Yeah, definitely. This book is published by my same publisher, Penguin Dutton Books for Young Readers. So it's still for young adults, although I get feedback from a lot of adults who have really enjoyed the book and connected with it too. But something that first made me really interested in the idea of writing a memoir, once I got past the idea of like me write a memoir, it was the idea of other teens reading it and connecting with that character of me and being able to see themselves in some of my experiences and then be able to see where I am now as I write in the prologue and epilogue about my life now and say, you know, it gets better and it can be great. And the idea about getting all better on your own terms rather than just what everybody expects all better to look like.
That idea of being all better, and I understand what you're saying, and you write about it beautifully in the book, but at some point it is defined as to before and after, before the accident and after the accident. There is a switch that is thrown.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the idea of getting all better is such a huge one of... For example, I once had a doctor who told me when I was probably in my early 20s, he said, you know, we as adults don't like to see children suffer. So there's this huge pressure for them to get better because we want to be able to say, but you're better now, right? You're all better. And them to say yes, and then for adults to say, oh, good, you know, like we've done something to make you all better and you're not suffering anymore. And that's so rarely the case that there's this time of here's when you're better, here's when you're not, but here's the one solid thing that we can do to fix you. And I think that it's a lot more nuanced than that. For example, now the idea of being all better because you don't have a brain tumor. I don't have a brain tumor anymore. I still live with a brain injury. And I still talk to people. This is Brain Injury Awareness Month. And I talk to people about life with a brain injury and how it is. And you know, what I struggle with on a daily basis and what it looks like for me to be all better. And it doesn't mean that that there's been no one thing that I could point to that has been a cure-all in my life that has fixed me to be all better. But we sort of want it to be that way. We want it to be that we could just put a Band-Aid on it and say, look, now it's all better, you know. But that's not always the way of life, and that's okay.
Let me ask you about the picture on the front of the book, because it
yeah.
it is you, and you're very young, and you're in pigtails, and you're cute as anything, but boy, you don't look happy. And so where did that, tell us a little bit about the picture, and anybody can look online and see it because it's the cover of the book, but tell us a little bit about the picture and how that sort of sums things up.
Yeah, I love that picture, and I think I was so glad that the cover artist had chosen it. The publishing company asked me to send in a few pictures for possible cover ideas, and I sent in that one because it's always been a favorite of mine. It's my first grade school picture. That was when I really first remember feeling very, very different. I was first starting to recognize that, like, other people didn't have headaches all the time. Like, the default that I had thought for the human brain was actually called a headache, and that other people weren't going around just with their head hurting all the time and just trying to cover it up, that there was actually a thing called a headache, and that I always had one. And that particularly when I'm in pigtails, braided pigtails, it hurts even more because they're tight and it pulls against my head. But for school picture day, you have to look nice. So you're going to wear these pigtails and see, doesn't that look so nice now? Doesn't it make up for having a little snarl in your hair that might have made your head sort of tender, but now it's fine? And it's like, because I think that was very much the way that people looked at someone so young, of like, well, yeah, of course your head kind of hurts, but like, let's make your hair look nice anyway. And I remember the photographer just being like, smile, why are you not smiling? And come on, smile. And I was like, I'm not going to smile. Like, this is not who I am. Like, this is not how I look on a certain day. This is like, I don't look happy on a certain day. And I'm not going to just pretend like this is who I am. And so I didn't smile. And I remember the photographer said, when your mom gets these, tell her you would not smile. I don't want to be taking retakes. So, that was how that came. But I like that because I think it's very indicative of that period in my time, in my life. And, you know, it's not a Kodak moment, as they used to say.
Right. And now you look at it and you say, my God, I had this huge tumor in the back of my head.
Yeah. Yeah. That doctors and even my parents and people were saying, oh, you know, sorry that you have a headache, and having no idea that was what was the reason behind any of it.
What was going on? The name of the book is
right.
All Better Now. It's a memoir. It's published by Dutton. Emily Wing Smith, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you so much for having me.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book is All Better Now, a memoir. It is published by Dutton. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.